an investor could come into my deal. And because I know that we can cycle out of pretty much any deal in 24 months or so, I would just pay them a fixed return on their investment. So if I'm paying them a 10 pref, I'm creating an interest reserve and paying them out of that reserve, regardless of the property's performance.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Tim Bratz is the CEO and founder of Legacy Wealth Holdings, a real estate investment company that acquires and transforms distressed apartment buildings into high-yield assets for their own portfolio. Tim's current portfolio exceeds 4,500 units with a valuation of more than $350 million. Working in real estate, Tim has built a passive business and created a residual income that allows him to live the lifestyle of his choice. He's here to educate and empower others to become financially free through commercial real estate. Tim, welcome to the show.
Sam, excited to be here, man. Thanks for having me.
Hey, pleasure's all mine, as always. You know, the same question I ask everybody who comes on this show. Can you briefly tell us, where'd you start? Where are you now? How did you get there?
Yeah, a lot to unpack, but I'll try to give you the Cliff Notes version. No, I'm a blue-collar kid from Cleveland, Ohio, and grew up going through college when the market was going crazy last time. So 03 to 07, saw a lot of people making a lot of money. I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur, and I was money motivated. So I got involved in real estate, got a real estate license, moved out to New York City after I graduated from college, brokered commercial real estate, saw how much money there was in owning versus brokering, went down that road instead. And then I moved to Charleston, South Carolina in 08. And bought my first property, went through that analysis paralysis phase for 6 months, and then the whole market collapsed. And then in early 2009, I bought my first investment property and didn't know what I was doing. 23-year-old kid, worst housing market ever, and still made money on it. And I was like, well, you know, if I do it once, let's go do it again. And just kept on, you know, doing that over and over and over again. Got into wholesaling, got into flipping, got into turnkey, built up a management company, got into apartments in 2012, and just been focused on apartments ever since. So today, yeah, I'm at $4,500 or a little over 4,500 doors, selling some of those, but we're also buying some. So that number fluctuates, but got a little over $400 million in assets. And majority of that's apartments. I have a little bit in storage units, a little bit in office, a little bit in vacation rentals, but 95% of my portfolio is apartment buildings.
Wow, that's really cool. I mean, you did it all out of the gate. I think a lot of us have gone through those iterations of like, okay, now we're going to wholesale. Now we're going to fix and flip. Now we're going to hold single families. Now we're going to, and I guess as you went through that, you went through it pretty quickly. It took me
not necessarily. Like I kind of fast tracked, but I've done everything, but did a bunch of little stuff like for the first few years. I was bad at real estate for the first few years, and then I got good a few years ago, right? But no, over the course of about 8 or 9 years, I've done all those.
Right. Yeah, that makes me feel better because it probably took me 6 or 7 before I'm like, golly, these are a lot of moving pieces and I'm doing all this at once. Why don't we focus on something we can big or something that is big that we can then scale?
Yeah.
So it sounds like you went that route for multifamily housing. Now, you said here that you guys are selling and you're buying. Mm-hmm. So can you kind of walk us through what your thought processes are on both of those fronts?
Yeah, man. I think that's a great question. You know, I think that as you mentioned, there's different stages, right? I think everybody kind of starts out, hey, let me go get my real estate license. And then let me start wholesaling. And then I fix and flip. And then I start buying and holding single family and then small multi. And then you get into larger apartments. And that's the transition that I went through, right? And that's the graduated experience that I went through. And it just, I'm looking at my portfolio today and I realized I need to trim some fat. I need to kind of eliminate some of the higher maintenance type of properties. When I mean high maintenance, I mean just the small stuff, the C-class stuff, anything that's bigger and in the areas where I see myself holding for the next 20 years, I'm keeping that. Anything else that I don't see myself holding that long term, then I'm going to sell it off. And so that's what I'm doing. It does a few things. One, it gets me more liquid. You know how real estate investors are. We go a lot of times through these feast and famine cycles of being cash rich and then equity rich, right? And then it goes back and forth. And, you know, so it's going to put a lot of liquidity in my pocket, which is going to just be able to then build a moat around me and my family. And then it's going to get my investors paid back. And it's going to then give us a lot of deals at a huge, like dozens and dozens of apartment buildings, big buildings. I'm talking $1 million to $20 million deals that we've taken full cycle of bought, renovated, rented all out, put good management in place, and either refinanced or sold it off for big profits. And it's just going to put us in a position where now we're taking a step back to make some big leaps forward. I know one of the questions you asked me earlier that I didn't actually hit on was, where are you going? Is our goal is to hit $1 billion in total asset value over the next 24 months. So we're going to scale back probably to around $300 million. and then jump forward over the next 24 months and try to pick up about 3,000 or 4,000 doors a year for the next 2 years.
Right, man. I love that. I love the setting the target. I think that's important. But I think the other thing that I really appreciate about what you're saying here is that you're eliminating some of the higher maintenance Class C. And I think that's where we are in this cycle. I mean, mm-hmm. we're seeing right now stuff that's selling, you know, Class C assets that's selling for what, you know, Class B plus was five or six years ago. And so you're going, wait, we can clear the decks of the stuff that cost me money, or not money, but cost me really brain power and manpower, and then graduate up into higher assets. I think that's really brilliant. What are you guys doing right now because there is money to be made in Class C. I mean, I hate to say it. There's a lot of money to be made there. But what are you guys doing right now to kind of protect? I know you said put a moat around you and your family, but also as you guys find your next investments, how are you making sure that those are going to hit the same return profiles that maybe you've hit in the past and or that you want to hit?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. So I'm pretty active in social media, right? Putting content out. And I don't necessarily go through brokers like a lot of other people do. In some markets, I am one of the bigger buyers and they know me. And so I get deals off market before they actually hit the market and before they get into like bidding wars. We still have to deal with some of that. But I mean, majority of the stuff that we're buying is stuff that's direct to seller, right? Direct, where we're not getting into dealing with brokers, not dealing with multiple buyers, not dealing with bidding wars. And we can negotiate better terms, better pricing because of that. And so that's one of the first things that we're doing. The second thing is we're getting creative on the money side and how we're structuring the capital. I think with rates being so low, it's almost like free money, right? Like I'm refinancing 200 units out in Oklahoma right now. And the quote came in at 3.15% interest rate. Like
for how long?
It's a 10-year term, first 5 years are interest only, 30-year amortization thereafter, and non-recourse agency debt. So it's like, dude, it's free money, right? It's like this thing will cash flow, 200 units will cash flow probably $40,000 to $45,000 a month after all operating expenses and debt service. So it's like, you know, I'm a believer that you don't have to hit home runs. I'm a believer that base hits win ball games, right? So if it's a base hit, dude, we're taking it down. We're going to go buy it, fix it all up. I'm always looking for the value add, the sweat equity that we can put in or how we can improve it. And we try to kill deals. We don't try to force them. You know, I stress test all the numbers. I stress test the rents. I stress test the LTVs, the interest rates, all that stuff. And if we can't kill it, then I know it's a good deal. So that's like the pillars of how we do business and how we underwrite projects. But, you know, we're getting creative, like I said, on the financing side, where we're restructuring it, maybe giving a little bit more equity up to the investors. And doing a lower pref or something along those lines. My strategy has always been a little bit different. I've always done heavier value adds, shorter time frames, and cycle these things out within 24 months or so, get the investors all their money back. And so I would always pay like a fixed return of 8 to 10% and then get them all their money back and then keep them in for like maybe a quarter of the deal, quarter of the equity long term. And it was good because I could cycle my investors' money pretty substantially, right? And they can get into three deals with me in the same time as one deal with somebody else, a traditional syndicator. So we're looking at more of the traditional syndication route, or maybe like a hybrid of maybe a lower pref and maybe a longer time frame. And so we're playing around with a couple of things, looking at some depreciation plays of what if, like, I have so much depreciation, I don't need it all. So I could actually give all my depreciation to the investors. And so we're looking at some different strategies on that front too.
You said something interesting there, and I want to kind of rewind the tape a little bit, and maybe I'm just slow to pick up, but you said you were able to cycle these deals through for your investors two or three times, maybe versus what a traditional syndication would be. Can you slow that down a little bit and tell us how you're doing that again?
So pre-COVID, we would buy a heavily distressed asset. And we would put a ton of sweat equity in. So I'd buy buildings for $15,000 a door and put another 10 to 15 a door into them. And so I'm all in for $30,000, $35,000 a door. And then they'd appraise at 60 a door. When I do that, then I can go put a new LTV loan on there at, let's call it 70% LTV. Let's call it $42,000 a door, right? So that allows me to then, it's the BRRRR strategy, right? Buy, renovate, rent, refinance, and rinse and repeat.
Right. You're just doing it on multifamily.
I just do it on multifamily on a larger scale. And that's always been my business model. So I could buy something and refinance it within 24 months. We were doing it for 18 months before COVID even. Some of the heavier ones were 30 months. But an investor could come into my deal. And because I know that we can cycle out of pretty much any deal in 24 months or so, I would just pay them a fixed return on their investment. So if I'm paying them a 10 pref, I'm creating an interest reserve and paying them out of that reserve, regardless of the property's performance. So it hits two things. It makes the investor, you know, gives them predictable cash flow, right? Which typically when you're getting into heavy value adds, there's higher upside, but not the predictable cash flow that I usually have. So it was very predictable for me to just say, hey, if I'm going to borrow $2 million on this deal, it's going to cost me $200,000 a year if I'm paying a 10% pref. And let's say it takes me 18 months to stabilize it. Let me just put a reserve in place of $300,000. And I'm going to build that into the, I got to be all in for 65 cents on the dollar of what the stabilized value is. So it allowed me to just kind of build and bake that in. And then I could pay them a pref out of the reserve. They feel good about that. And then I get all their money returned to them whenever we refinance in about 24 months. And then they have all their money off the table. And then they would keep some of the equity, typically around 25% of the equity in the deal forever, even after all their money's been returned. So it was a really good way to go and raise capital from people who, you know, make a bunch of money in their traditional business or in their job or have money in a 401k or IRA. And they're looking to deploy it where they want predictable income and upside. So it was a good balance. So it allowed me to just cycle through their money every 24 months. And as soon as you pay them back, they said, where's the next deal, right? Let's roll it forward into the next one. And then so I can get them into maybe two or three deals in a 5 or 6 year time frame versus one traditional syndication where you're buying a building for $10 million and then you're waiting for it to appreciate value by 3 to 5% every year for the next 5 to 7 years in order to then sell it or refinance it in the future. So it's just a different philosophy, a different way. The key though is you got to find great deals and you got to be really, really good with project management. So if you're not, man, it can really bite you in the butt, and the delays and the additional going over budget and that kind of stuff can eat up that profit margin. So you got to be really good at those two things. Fortunately, we have a great team in place that is really good at it. And I'll say that COVID definitely has thrown a curveball into some supply chain issues, some labor issues for us. So we're not doing as many heavy value adds anymore, more in the moderate to light value adds. And we're doing a little bit of new construction.
Yeah, I think, the risk you pose there, I think are notable in that if you don't know what you're doing, if your project management isn't on point, then, you know, because you're going to raise, basically what you're doing is raising extra money to then pay it back to the investors in that 18 to 24 month hold period.
Yep. It's an interest reserve, just like the banks would charge if you were building new construction or something like that. That's exactly what we're doing.
Yeah. 100%. But your risk there is, well, I guess, twofold. One, you do the construction, you then don't get the lease up as planned, right? Mm-hmm. Property never becomes the cash flowing asset that you wanted it to be. So there's risk one. You know, risk too, like you said, with the project management side of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, having those two things on point. Yeah, those are two valuable things to know. Yep. in that strategy. I think that's interesting too, that you were able to find investors that are, hey, you know, it's a 10% return, it's a paid monthly, and that's it. But when you cash them out upon refi, you said this, I think earlier, you left them maybe a quarter equity in the deal.
Yep. So
it was kind of a kicker almost.
Yep.
It was like, hey, you know what? Here's a kicker. You get 25% equity in the deal for whatever you put in. But then that's good for you also as the sponsor, because then obviously there's less equity in the deal. The preferred return becomes much smaller. I mean, it's kind of a win-win for the right investor.
It is. And I think it's an education, because when you go and talk to like a traditional syndicator or somebody who's familiar with institutional equity, they're like, I would never do that deal. Okay, well, I understand, but because you're looking at just the surface value of, or not even the value, the surface percentage of equity that you're getting in any given deal. But when you take a look at, hey, I'm all into a $10 million deal for $6.5 million, right? So that 25% equity is actually worth more than somebody who's going and buying a $10 million building for $9 million or $9.5 million, right? And so because we're able to source phenomenal deals, and because we're putting, it's the operators who are putting in all the sweat equity and creating the value and pushing that value up, I think it needs to make sense and needs to be weighted to be advantageous for the operators. And I will say, like, we don't take other fees. We might take an acquisition fee, like one out of, I'd say half the deals we do would take an acquisition fee. We don't take any asset management, no dispo fees, no capital events fees, no capital raising fees, no sponsorship fees. We don't nickel and dime it on fees. So that way we're in the boat rowing in the same direction as the equity investor to get them their money back. Because when they get their money back, that's when my cash flow, my refi proceeds start coming through.
Right. And then it becomes an infinite return for your investors. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're getting paid for something that you have no money in. That's ideal. That's really fascinating. Yeah, I haven't heard that strategy.
Just different, you know?
Yeah, I like it. I like it. But then you mentioned maybe you guys are, you know, moving towards, on some of your deals, more traditional syndication models. What's the thinking behind that?
Yeah, well, I mean, you see how much money there is out there right now, you know? And so if there's a deal that doesn't meet our traditional investment criteria, but we have access to the capital, and we can go structure it in a more traditional syndication way. Again, if it's a good deal and something that they don't need to get paid back on for 5, 7, maybe even 10 years, then you can go and pay closer to a retail price for something and just let principal pay down occur, let the property naturally appreciate, and maybe you take some fees and take a little bit less equity. And so we're okay doing that too. You know, again, I'm just looking to do base hits, man. I'm just looking for, and we'll structure it any way that we can.
Right. I love that. I love that. Let's talk about the capital raise side of things. What was that like for you starting out, and how were you able to bring investors on board with what you guys are doing?
Yeah. So majority of my invest, like I've raised over $100 million of mom and pop money. I've never taken on any institutional equity, family office money, or anything like that. Everybody that invests with me are people that I've known or people that I've met through networking and masterminds and through the real estate space, just doing business. And a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of people who are making money in their traditional business and then just looking to passively invest in commercial real estate. And so I have people with $100,000 to several million dollars with me, and we have hundreds and hundreds of investors. So whenever I talk to somebody who's familiar with traditional syndication and traditional equity splits and all that kind of stuff, it's very difficult for me to kind of overcome and educate them on why this could be a good deal for them. But when I talk to somebody who's used to making 6 to 8% in the stock market, or they're looking at their other options, they realize, oh damn, I can make a 10% return that's predictable and I get my money back, and then I still have equity in the deal and I get long-term appreciation, depreciation, cash flow, refinance proceeds. There's a lot of benefits to that. And I could cycle their money and get them into, like I said, 2 or 3 deals in my syndication model versus a traditional syndication. So if you take a look at the returns, assuming you get into 2 deals with me in 5 years over 1 deal in a traditional syndication, the returns are actually exceed that. So it's just kind of, it's an educational type thing. And so if somebody's not familiar with traditional syndication, it's easy for me to educate them and tell them what it is. And they're like, dang, this is amazing. If they're a traditional syndicator or they're familiar with that world, it's a little bit more of an education. And I was in the turnkey space doing single family turnkey before. So I've raised a lot of my money from people who want exactly what I offer, right? Hmm. They wanted to buy a single family house for $75,000 that rents for $750 a month. They don't want to do any work, right? It's already renovated. It's already rented. Management's in place. They want to stroke a check, get paid their money, and they want an 8 to 10% return along with some appreciation over time, right? So it's very easy for me to take that person and say, hey, here's an even more passive way of doing it. Just invest in this deal as an equity investor. And that's easy. And I've taken a lot of hard money lenders from the single family side too. And kind of like what we were talking about is like, you go through those progressions in wholesaling, flipping, you know, rentals, all that stuff. I think hard money lenders go through the same thing, right? They're tired of doing the transactional stuff on the single family side. They want predictable. They'll take a little bit lesser return for equity upside into long-term plays. And I've converted a lot of my hard money lenders on the single family side into being equity investors on the commercial side.
Right, man. That's awesome. That is awesome. Very cool. Quickly, let's talk, because we're going to run out of time here, but let's talk about building your team. You got a lot of moving parts and a lot of moving pieces. What has been really the one key that has helped you bring on good team members?
That's a great question, man. It's something that I don't really get asked too often, but I think the key is, man, A players, right? Like bringing on absolute studs. And the tough part is when you first get started in business, there's a few layers of business. First level is, you know, $0 to $1 million. You're just trying to prove concept that you can make money and generate some revenue. Then you get to like this million to 10 million range. And you're like, I got something, but I'm not making enough money to then bring on these executives, $100,000, $200,000 salaries that I need in order to really scale. And then there's a 10 to 50 million and above, where now it's just about market domination. So that million to 10 million is where I see a lot of entrepreneurs getting stuck because they can't afford A players. You know, how do you hire a COO? How do you hire bring an in-house legal officer? How do you like bring on an HR expert when you're just trying to keep your head above water? And one of the things that I've done and where we have a lot of benefits is, you know, we're doing deal by deal basis. So one of the things that I did was I attracted A players into my business by paying a base salary. $50,000 a year is what everybody on my team, all the executives on my team get paid. And then everybody's got some sort of profit share, bonus structure, or real equity in my deals. So like my executive team has actual equity in every single deal that I do. And that builds their net worth by 7 figures every single year. And so it's a way that I can not take on the overhead and the upfront expense of hiring these people and make it beneficial for them to still want to partner up. So on a deal by deal basis, you can do that and just say, hey, let me bring on this person, let them be kind of a in-house attorney or something and do everything at cost. Let me give them a little bit of equity. And then let's see how we like doing that deal together. If we do, then we'll do another one and another one and another one. And eventually maybe we'll get more married and start doing deals across the board, all of them together. But it's a way that you don't have to get married. You can date people on a deal by deal basis in order to make sure that you're a good fit for each other. And that's what I ended up doing. So my COO, we were co-wholesaling deals together. I brought him in on salary, and then eventually he vested into equity. My attorney was my business attorney for 7 years. And about 2.5 years ago, I said, hey man, you need to be coming in-house, right? Let me pay you. He was making $120,000 a year. I paid him 50. And then he got equity, but it's increased his net worth by, like I said, 7 figures over that time. So, and now, you know, we have the consulting business and the education side and stuff too, where those guys get paid on that part and their partners there. And so they're all making $300,000 a year now. But there were some skinny years before that. How do you figure that out, man? And the way that we did it was we essentially joint ventured on deals.
Right. Yeah, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. Yeah. I mean, you could probably spend a full day or more just talking about your structures and how you brought that on and you know, working through the nuances of that. Mm-hmm. I think at a high level, that's absolutely fascinating. Tim, this has been awesome. I do appreciate it. Let's jump into the final four questions. You ready?
Let's do it.
First one is this. If I gave you just $20,000 to invest in real estate with no previous real estate investing experience, what would you do with it and why?
I join a mastermind. Hands down, I join a mastermind, because if you spend that $20,000 on a deal, you have to go and save up $20,000 again in order to go buy another deal. I would join a mastermind and get involved, invest it in myself to then meet people, meet resources, raise capital. You can raise a lot more than $20,000 from the people who are hanging out in a mastermind. And you can learn how to structure and you can get deal flow from it. And the best investment's always going to be in yourself.
Love it. If you could help our listeners avoid one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
Focus on revenue generating activities. I think a lot of people get caught in the busy work instead of the productivity stuff. And so revenue generating activities, there's really only three things that we need to be focused on: finding deals, raising money, and refining our operations. Anything else is just noise. So don't spend your time on anything else.
Right. Awesome. Investing in the world. What's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
So I launched a series of children's books last year called Little Legacy Library. And they're essentially modeled off of a lot of the classic personal development books: Think and Grow Rich, we have Think Big and Go to Baseball Camp, How to Win Friends and Influence People, How to Win Class President, Power of Positive Thinking, we have Power of Positivity, and Richest Man in Babylon, we have The Richest Kid in the Neighborhood. And so we have children's versions with those thought philosophies, with our own storyline for kids 4 to 10 years old. So perfect for yours, man.
Man, that's awesome. Yeah, the Little Legacy Library. That is absolutely fascinating. We'll put a link to that. I'm assuming their website and things like that for it. Mm-hmm. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. Tim, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah, social media. I think social media, if you're using it to connect and create content, is the most powerful marketing tool the world has ever seen. And so I try not to consume a lot. I try to connect with great people, great real estate investors, entrepreneurs, people that I can help and people that we can do some deals together. So yeah, please connect with me on Facebook, Instagram, and just connect with me there. Shoot me a message and send me a friend request, whatever that looks like. And would love to see if we can do some deals together.
Awesome. Tim, thanks so much for your time. Do appreciate it.
Appreciate you, Sam. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.